Today's program has been brought to you by Root 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Thanks for tuning in. This is Sari Kamen with HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm coming to you from the studio in Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I am here today with Chef Kevin Nashen. He is the chef of Sydney Street Cafe in St. Louis. He's a 5-time James Beard nominee, and we're lucky to have him here with us today. Hi, Chef. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. So I hear you're in New York for City Grit, which is happening right now as we speak, and will be continuing throughout the week and a little bit beyond that as well. So can you tell me a little bit about what you're doing with City Grit?
Yeah. So one of my dear friends and colleagues in St. Louis, Chef Gerard Kraft, we're doing a collaboration dinner. He owns Niche in St. Louis with Pastoria, Brasserie, and Taste by Niche, and we're going to do this collaboration dinner and just kind of promote St. Louis and Missouri, and I'm going to do 3 courses, he's going to do 3 courses, and we're really excited to be here.
That sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me a little bit about the food that you'll be serving? Is there a St. Louis theme that's going to be happening, because both of you are from the same area?
No, honestly, we didn't want to even get into that, so it's not like going to be stuff that you would traditionally see in, say, St. Louis. It's just, you know, we're cooking from our restaurant, and we're going to be doing 3 courses at stuff that's been, you know, either on my menu, his menu, and just kind of, you know, show off the Midwest ingredients and show off some of the East Coast. You know, I'm doing some seafood and that kind of thing, so I'm going to do some, like, pico crab and some beautiful tuna and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
So I really, really like that you're collaborating with a fellow chef, Gerard Kraft, and it's interesting that he's also a James Beard nominee this week.
And finalist.
And finalist,
yes.
As both are you.
No, I'm not a finalist.
You're not a finalist.
Not lucky enough yet.
Okay.
Hopefully one day.
Okay, well, you're still, you know, considered one of the best chefs from St. Louis, and so is he. But it sort of warms my heart that you're cooking together and you're collaborating. I guess in theory you could be sort of competitive in some sense, you know, cooking together in that way, but it sounds like it's much more of a collaboration.
Absolutely. You know, I think, he's one of my best friends, but besides that, you know, we definitely, you know, he's a colleague and we respect one another. And I think it says a lot about the city, because the city is really a big collaborative town. It's not about, you know, who's better or who's that. It's everyone gets together and just tries to make, you know, good food.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're excited to do this dinner together.
So I want to hear a little bit about, you know, your restaurant. You're from St. Mm-hmm. Louis. What's it like? What is the dining scene like in St. Louis right now? I mean, there's obviously 2
amazing,
renowned chefs that are, you know, working together that are here in New York this week. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
You know, it's I would say it's made so many changes in the last, like, 6 to 10 years. It's unbelievable. There's so many good, you know, great restaurants right now in St. Louis, and you know, you can definitely say that it's made some major strides. You know, restaurants like our buddy Kevin Willman at Farmhouse, Josh Galliano's opening a restaurant, you know, Lou Rook at Annie Gunn's, Ben Premba, Elia, and there's so many more to talk about. But, you know, there's some really, really great stuff going on in St. Louis, and not just restaurants, you know, great, incredible bakeries. Sloom Bedu has a incredible charcuterie program, really fun bars, Blood and Sand, Taste, and bakeries like Pint Size Bakery. My buddy Josh, who owns Companion Bread, unbelievable bread, sick. And it's just really cool. It's really warming. You know, I went to college here in the early 90s, left, came back, and it's just like, wow.
Yeah.
It's so cool, like, how it's coming. We have so many beautiful farms, like, around us, so it really helps to have really wonderful, yummy food.
Yeah. So when you were in New York working, were you aware of what was happening in St. Louis? Did that draw you back, or did you just kind of go back and were pleasantly surprised to see that there was so much happening.
Surprised. You know, I went back to see About a Girl and my wife. And,
oh, good. I'm glad that worked out.
That did.
It's always good when that's
two little
ending.
Boys to prove it. Nice. Exactly. but no, you know, it was one of those things that I knew St. Louis was always in my heart, like when I left college. So I know I wanted to come back. And it's such a neat food scene and great community that, you know, two major food papers, you know, Sauce and Feast, you know, some wonderful food writers, George Mahey, St. Louis Magazine, Evan Ben, Ian Frobe, just to name a few. I mean, there's just so much happening right now that it is like, it's really cool. It's just like, you see this like renaissance.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how Brooklyn, you know, Brooklyn in the last 8-10 years has really blown up. I mean, we're sitting in one of the hottest restaurants, you know, period. And it just, I feel like that's the
St.
kind
Louis
of,
is the new
I
Brooklyn.
Think it's the,
well, you heard
not
it here
so, no, not even, but, no, it's really warming to, you know, you mentioned you're from Cleveland, you went back this weekend and, it's really fun to see your hometown and I consider my hometown. Because, you know, it's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. I was in Cleveland this past weekend checking out the food scene there, and I was just so thrilled and overjoyed to see what's happening. Because the restaurant scene there is just absolutely explosive, and it was exciting. But the best part was visiting so many different chefs and how they all acknowledged each other and how they're all, you know, sourcing from each other, using ingredients from each other, collaborating. One person's featuring someone else's bread. One person's featuring someone else's ice cream. And I get the sense from talking to you, and we chatted for a second before, that a very similar thing is happening in St. Louis. Like these small Midwest cities are really relying on each other to become just bigger and better and having this renaissance moment and putting themselves on the map in this way.
Absolutely. You know, there's in life, it takes a village, and it's a complete testament. You know, it's never about one person. It's always about a collective group, and that's how you make, you know, something special happen, period.
So. Yeah, I'm just curious in your opinion, like, why is this happening? Like, where is this trickle down coming from? Is it from Brooklyn or somewhere, you know, that's had a food scene that's been on the map a little bit longer? Because one thing I noticed in Cleveland is there's very much this like farm to table thing that's happening, you know, which, you know, here in Brooklyn, we're sitting in Roberta's, it's sort of like the epicenter of that. But that was certainly new to me, you know, when I visited Cleveland, finding that there was such an emphasis on local ingredients, local sourcing. Do you feel like that's happening in St. Louis?
Well, I mean, yeah, of course, but I think it's been going on forever. They're just putting a tag on it. It's, I mean, you know, you have tons of farms. This isn't like some craze that's like happened. I mean, farm to table has been going on for forever.
And especially in
now,
areas like that where you're, you know,
I mean,
you're in proximity to rural areas. It makes
sense. You're 10 miles away from like, you know, 40 farms.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Like you don't necessarily
like a no-brainer.
Have to have
you
a
do
rooftop
it because,
garden.
Yeah, you do it because A, it's, you know, a better product and it's less expensive. It's like, duh.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I don't know where this renaissance is coming in all these small towns, but I think honestly, a lot of people are coming back to their hometowns and they get the experience at really incredible restaurants and come back and get to share that with their city.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about your restaurant, which is Sydney Street Cafe. And I have to tell you, I was looking at the menu online and I had this feeling, I had this sense, like while I was looking at the menu descriptions, that it was kind of like watching Chopped, where they open a basket and they pull out like all these ingredients and they have to make something. There was such like an interesting dynamic that seemed to be created. And I just want to read the description of some of the menu items, just, you know, so you at home can know what I'm talking about. So we've got pasta.
Mm-hmm.
That's miso noodles, mortadella, English peas, pickled red onion, sauerkraut chip, and a ginger vinaigrette. We have smoked salmon niçoise. It's a berejoule of artichoke, tomato confit, egg, crispy skin, and pickled green beans. And big eye tuna. We have shad roe, ragu of peas, pulled ham hock, sorrel ice cream, and a brown butter vinaigrette. So, I mean, all of those sound delicious, but there's just so much imagination there and so much creativity. What inspires you when you set about, like, you know, composing a dish to use such interesting and, you know, a little bit, like, esoteric ingredients?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's just kind of trying to hopefully think outside the box and, A, make it taste good first and foremost, and then have a little twist of your own on there. So, you know, like, salmon niçoise, there's always tuna niçoise, so why can't there be salmon niçoise? And just kind of break it down in its, you know, formalities and that kind of thing. But
sorrel ice cream.
Yeah.
With tuna.
Yeah.
So, did you just wake up one day and you're like, oh, sorrel would be delicious as an ice cream?
I don't know. It just happened. It metamorphosed. we started it off as like kind of like an intermezzo with like some wild charro. And it's like, you know, really bright and it kind of, you know, explains spring. And the wild charro is like really salty. And then we're like, you know, tuna always benefits from like salty stuff. And you always want something green. So we're like, you know, peas go well with mint and sorrel. So it's kind of like they all kind of started to come together. And then brown butter vinaigrette. I mean, it's delicious with it. So I don't know. It's just stuff kind of metamorphosis. You try out stuff and hopefully it works out. And if it doesn't, then you don't put it on the menu.
Yeah. But then there's also these like super traditional French classic dishes like the filet bearnaise. Mm-hmm. Because you have a French culinary background. So I really love the juxtaposition that's happening, like very, very traditional, like just an homage to your French culinary training. And then, you know, this kind of like explosive modern American fusion almost that's happening. can you comment on that? Like you just know, the diversity that's happening on the menus?
At the end of the day, I love meat and we're in the Midwest. And people love, you know, filet, and they, you know, so it, I think it's important to have it, especially if people really want it. So we have that along with everything else that we have. So it's just a kind of a tribute.
It definitely speaks to the Midwest clientele, you know, the diners who are, some of them are coming in looking to eat something traditional that they're used to,
exactly.
Meat and potatoes, which is essentially what this is. And then there's those that are probably, you know, really open-minded, looking for something new, have heard the buzz around your restaurant, and are ready to have their minds expanded a little bit when they go in for dinner.
That's the hope.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's a really, you know, successful combination that's happening. On that note, we're just going to take a quick break, check in with the sponsors, and we will be back with Kevin Nashen.
Thanks.
You're listening to Everything She Touches Turns to Gold by Four Lincolns on the Heritage Radio Network.org. Walking home alone, so enlightened, no one's listening. Everything she touches turns to gold, turns to gold, turns to gold. And everything she touches turns to gold. She's all alone, she turns to gold. Your shadow is only a matter of time before it catches you. And everything she touches turns to gold, turns to gold, turns to gold. And everything she touches turns to gold. She's all alone, she turns to gold. She turns to gold. Finds herself on the brighter side. Looks for ambition in a snow-covered night. With a face.
The following program has been brought to you by Root 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Root 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Root 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com. Did you know HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a member-supported nonprofit organization? If you like what you're listening to, go to our website and click that donate button. Become a member and get special discounts, invites, VIP treatment, t-shirts, and more. Support us in our mission to bring you the freshest food content in the nation.
Hey, we're back. Thanks for listening. This is Sari Kamen with HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm in the studio with Chef Kevin Nashen from Sydney Street Cafe in St. Louis. Welcome back, Chef.
Hi.
Hi. He's in town for City Grit, which is happening this week. He's cooking on Thursday night. And you're in St. Louis now. You've been there for a while, mm-hmm. but you're not actually from St. Louis originally.
Correct.
Right. So you're from New Mexico.
New Mexico.
Okay. So you got...
The land of enchantment.
Oh. So you actually grew up in the restaurant business.
Yeah. I grew up in Sanford, New Mexico. Mm-hmm.
Your family was restaurant owners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what was that like? How did you get into the restaurant business, sort of fall in love with it? What was your experience like in New Mexico growing up?
Yeah, well, I grew up in it my whole life. So the restaurant was around for 27 years, and it was called La Tertulia, and it meant the gathering place. And it was a native New Mexican restaurant, Spanish influence. My grandfather opened it, and it was incredible, you know, just mostly did front-of-the-house stuff and, you know, bus tables, wash dishes, that kind of thing. And it was an awesome experience growing up, but I didn't, you know, I thought I wanted to do something else. So I went to college and thinking I was going to be a lawyer and realized that, you know, you had some brains and that kind of thing. So that didn't, I was like, I kind of like, you know, fell back and I'm like, I'm going to take the culinary approach and
yeah.
went to school at CIA and then fell in love with it. Took the trash out in a lot of restaurants. And yeah, it's been a fun, awesome ride. And definitely, you know, my background and growing up into it has definitely helped me.
So you weren't actually cooking in New Mexico?
No, I was more eating.
Nice.
Eating and bussing and yeah. washing dishes.
How old were you when you were like washing dishes in
like,
the kitchen?
I mean, literally, the restaurant opened in 1972. I was born in 1972. So I grew up my whole life
yeah.
in that restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what made you think you wanted to be a lawyer at one point?
I don't know. I just wanted to do something completely
different.
Did you feel
a sense of rebellion? Were you like, I'm out of here?
No, but imagine you're in a fishbowl and that's all you know and do. You think you want to do something else.
Yeah.
But thank God I didn't, because it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. Did you find you really missed it when you were away from it?
Well, I found out that when I went to culinary school at CIA that I really loved food. And
yeah.
so it was cool.
Yeah.
It made sense.
Yeah. And you went to New York after,
mm-hmm.
okay, and
yep.
you were at Danielle.
Yep, yep. I was lucky enough to be there for a little bit and hang out. It was definitely an interesting ride there,
yeah.
you know.
How is it different from New Mexico or anywhere else that you'd ever worked before?
Where, Danielle?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, first off, the year I was there were so many incredible chefs there. You know, our chef de cuisine was Chef Alex Lee, and he's the bomb. Unbelievable. And Danielle himself is just a monster. They're incredible mm-hmm. people. And you know, you had like Neil Gallagher and Brad Thompson and Chris Lee, a lot of like incredible people in the industry that all worked for them in that one year. So it was really, really cool.
Yeah. Was there a little bit of like a shock to your system though, to have to like work with such discipline? And you know, I know you went to CIA, so you did have like a sense
yeah,
of
I
French
worked,
culinary.
Yeah, but I worked at a bunch of restaurants kind of before then, like Commander's Palace and Martin Berisategui and La Francaise. So I definitely had discipline in that, but
mm-hmm.
it was definitely, I mean, Danielle is Danielle.
Danielle,
I mean, it's just
Danielle.
A completely different place and it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it, I wish I would have stayed longer.
Oh yeah.
You hear that, chef?
He's like, there's always a job for you washing dishes.
Exactly. But no, it was incredible.
Yeah,
definitely.
So what really influenced you the most, like after your staging positions, whether you're at, you know, Commander's Palace or when you were at Danielle, what were you able to take from those experiences, and what would we find in your cuisine that is, you know, very reflective of the time that you had working in those kitchens?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, any true cook in life has just influence from everywhere they've worked. And it's not necessarily, you can't pinpoint one exact thing, but, you know, I mean, they all kind of preach the same thing. You know, you source incredible ingredients, you cook with incredible technique, you have discipline, and, you know, you don't weigh in terms of, you know, you want to create the best you can and be hospitable with it. And so, you know, you learn, like from the Brennans, for instance, at Commander's Palace, you learn a lot about hospitality, and you learn to move your behind. Jamie Shannon was the chef when I was there at the time, and he, you know, you learn different skills at different places, so, you know, and you just hone in, and hopefully you retain, it's kind of like a book, you hopefully at the end of the journey you retain enough that it helps you progress into something else.
I just think it's really interesting that you ended up in St. Louis. Like, Danielle is so quintessential, you know, high-end French, you know, just world-renowned, and I'm just curious, like, how how did your training and how did like the level of high-end kitchens that you worked in, how were you able to bring that to St. Louis and have it be, you know, still a neighborhood restaurant? Maybe you could talk a little bit about like the atmosphere of Sydney Street.
It's actually a very interesting, you know, this is our 10th year, mm-hmm. the restaurant. We took over a family restaurant. It was this place called Sydney Street Cafe, and it was a meat and potatoes restaurant. And I felt like when we purchased it, we were like, you know, this is a place that we can definitely evolve and make our own. But it's all about like making an experience, and you know, you have to gain the trust of people. And people in St. Louis really didn't know who I was, and even though I went to college there. And it just takes time, and you know, with helpful you know, other people in the industry like Gerard Kraft and Willman and all that, we all are able to bounce one another and evolve hopefully the food scene. And that's kind of like the evolution of the restaurant. It's just very, you know, it takes time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I asked this question to some of the chefs in Cleveland because they're going through, like we said, you know, really similar food renaissance. And it's kind of like a chicken or the egg scenario. Like, were the diners sort of hungry for, you know, a more forward thinking approach to food? Or did you find that you had to kind of tease them into it with your ingredients and they had to warm up to you? I mean, was there...
No, I mean, first and foremost, you need the customers first.
You know?
Without them, nothing's possible. So, but I think it's like a trust thing, you know? I mean, imagine like, you know, if things, you know, you ate the same thing all the time and that kind of thing, and then there's different choices now. But, you know, it's, you know, there's like 500 restaurants in St. Louis, so why are they choosing to go to your restaurant and... why are they going to take a risk on their two-hour dinner on stuff that they're not familiar with? And those are the hard approaches. That's where you need to hold their, you know, their hand. They need to trust you, and you need to trust them, and then go on it. But it's definitely been, it's an interesting ride.
Yeah, and have you seen an evolution in your diners since they started coming to your restaurant? Where people like, sauerkraut chip, or I guess that would be more familiar, but shad roe, like what is that? And now they're like, I'm here for the shad roe, you know.
I mean like anything in life, I think people, you know, have their wants and desires, and that's what the great thing of having diversity, you know, people can make decisions and choose from that. I think they appreciate evolving, and they appreciate that, you know, the restaurants are trying to make the experience, and whether it be service and food, all better.
Yeah.
And that's what, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. It doesn't matter, like, you know, what, you know, all these ingredients, if they don't taste good and they're not served properly and you don't care, then why have them?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's great. So let's get back to City Grit, because that's why you're here.
Exactly.
So that's taking place. You're cooking this coming Thursday night. That's Thursday, May 2nd.
Yep.
7:30. And we believe there are some tickets available if you want to get an actual taste of Chef Nashen's cooking instead of just listening to the descriptions of it, which I'm sure you do at this point. You can go to citygritnyc.com to get your tickets. And you wanted to tell us a little bit more about what you're doing there, and you had a couple things to say, I think.
Yeah, no. So we're doing the dinner on Thursday, and then I'm coming back on Saturday to do a dinner. I'm going to wash dishes for Chef Chris Hastings and and help out with his dinner. And no, it's great. You know, I think Sarah's done an incredible job with City Grits, and we're excited that we're lucky enough to be invited, and we're excited. So thanks.
Yeah.
Again, for the opportunity. We appreciate it.
So go online, go to City Grit NYC, get your tickets right now, because time is running out, to get a taste of Kevin Nashen's food from Sydney Street Cafe. I know that I will be looking forward to it.
Cool.
Thank you so much for coming on, Chef. It was great
Thanks.
To meet you.
Great to meet you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.